This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 359, I think. 359. So we are well on our way to the 7 years worth of podcasts. What, seven times 52? Be 364. Wow, that's coming up fast. That's right. It's like the third week of March, and this is the second week of February. I'm going to have to get in touch with the kids, because we got to have our year in review podcast. 7 years worth of podcasts. So, that's coming up. I'm going to have to get that scheduled with them. It's been a big year. Lots of interesting things. Obviously, my son-in-law has been pastor of Praise Assembly now for over a year, so that's pretty interesting. So we'll have to get that scheduled. So we are five podcasts away, not counting this podcast. We are five podcasts away from the 7 years. 7 years worth of podcast. A great deal of flapping of the gums. My wife and I went to Branson this last weekend, kind of just partially because we hadn't gotten away for a while because our vacation got cut short when the basement flooded. And then it was also my wife's birthday last Monday, so we kind of, you know, wanted to get away for that. And so we had a really nice time. It was fun, very relaxing. And we actually went to see Hail Caesar, which is the new Coen Brothers movie. And we went to see it in one of those theaters that have, like, the Lazy Boy recliners in them. Except they're not Lazy Boy recliners, but, you know. The Lazy Boy recliners in them, and they serve you food and all that kind of stuff. So that was fun. It's just something, you know, a little different. Where there was a funny... This was... had a little saliva go down the wrong pipe. This was a... go to Branson, which is primarily a summer, you know, location. Go to Branson in the winter when they're on winter schedules and all the websites say they're still on a summer schedule. So there was one thing that I just thought was hysterical. It was just hysterical. My wife had gotten tickets to the toy museum down there. World's largest toy museum. So she had gotten tickets to that. It was just something to do. She'd gotten them cheap. And so we were going to go see the toy museum. And so she'd hopped on the website. It said 8 o'clock. It's open till 8 o'clock at night. So great. So we kind of puttered around. And so we got there. And we just pulled in. Got out of the car, we were walking towards the door, and the light above our heads just shut off. We looked at the clock, and it was 6 o'clock, and we came around the corner. Sure enough, they're on their winter schedule. They're only open till 6. So it was like, ah, oh, rats. So it was a little interesting things because things were just shutting down at early hours. And so, you know, it'd get to be about 9 o'clock and there is basically nothing open. And so, but it was fun. It was fun just to get away. So that was all good. What else? I'm writing like crazy. I lost some time this weekend. So we're gonna see if we can get caught up this weekend. Gotta give it the old college try. Theoretically, I only have 2 more weeks of writing to do, and I've got this book closed. Although, I don't think so. We'll see. I've got quite a bit of story left to tell, but theoretically, I only have about 95 pages left to tell that story, and at 300 words a page approximately, you know, you're looking at about 27,000 words, which that's a little long because I'm over 100,000 words now, and so I really need to finish this story up in about 20,000 words, which means I got about 70 pages, which I need to really land this book at about 400 pages. I'm at 330 right now, 330-ish. I kind of got a lot of story to finish up, but I think it's going to be okay. It's just going to, the pace is going to pick up. So, we'll see. You know, the story is what it is. It tells at the speed that it tells. I'm really hoping that this book isn't going to go to 250,000 words like the second book went to. It's just, man, it's hard. It's so hard when you're just writing as you go to try to plan out and land this thing at a certain length because, you know, you're trying to estimate. It's like you've been shot out of a cannon, you know, and you can spread your wings and soar a little more, and you've got this target down there you're trying to land in, you know, this little pool of water, and everything around it is rocks. And so you're trying to estimate, how much do I spread my wings, my artificial wings, and glide? How much do I pull in and fall? Not that I would ever do anything like that in the real world, but it's kind of like that. It's, you're just trying to estimate all the time. So we'll see. I've got, you know, 70, 80 pages left to go, and you can tell a lot of story in 70 or 80 pages. I've had whole books that were only 80 pages, but I got a lot of details to wrap up, so... So we'll see. It'll be interesting. I may take a writing vacation first week of March to get this thing back on track, since, you know, having the basement flood threw me off by a week, and so I may just use that and try to get kind of caught up, and my dad being in the hospital, et cetera. So we'll see. It will all work out. It will be fine. What else? Aside from that, everything's just puttering along. We actually discovered at work that maybe one of the guys I've been working with, there was a little problem with some of the code that was written that I probably should have caught, but I just caught it today. And as soon as I saw it, I went, okay, we're stopping this project right now until this is fixed. So that was a little exciting today. My heart kind of stopped for a moment. But we think we're okay. Anyways. Let's see. I was going to talk about this last week. But then last week I was hurrying to a dinner with a friend, which had a lovely dinner with my friend Thursday night. It was beautiful. I think that's the only, and then I had a breakfast with a buddy on Monday. And so when we're switching our breakfasts from first Thursday of the month to first Monday of the month, and both of us forgot last week, and I didn't have my 12-hour reminder on, which I have fixed now, and so I didn't get my 12-hour reminder last Monday, and so I'm getting on the Nordic track, and my reminder pops up 30 minutes, and it's like a 25-minute drive to this place, 30 minutes ahead of time, and says, you're having breakfast with so-and-so. And I'm like, oh, no! So I ran and jumped in the shower and headed out. I told him, I'm going to be 15 minutes late. So didn't shave, you know, just went through the whole thing. But had a lovely breakfast with him. Always enjoy talking to my buddies. It's good. My life is rich. Anyways, this topic I had come across... last week, it was a TED Talk by Harry Cliff, which was called Have We Reached the End of Physics? And I thought, oh, that sounds like a pretty interesting topic. And it was an interesting topic, not necessarily for the reasons that Harry Cliff would think so, but I found it fascinating, and we'll just have to see where this goes. The problem in physics is that mathematicians and physics people, physics people, what do you call, physicists, that's, I was keep calling them physicians, and I was like, no, it's not physicians, it's physicists. They've made some great progress over the last, whatever, 120 years or so, you know, I mean, it's, you got Albert Einstein, maybe 100 years or so, you got Albert Einstein, who basically thinks his way into a new theory, which is a fascinating thing to me, that he could just sit in a room and think about it without actually doing any experiments or anything like that, and then all the follow-on experiments actually start supporting his theories. And so he comes up with, you know, this theory, general theory of relativity, and it's, there's been a lot of experimentation afterwards. You know, it's unquestionably his masterpiece. The guy said there's even more, arguably more revolutionary has been quantum mechanics, which he describes as a mind-meltingly strange yet stunningly successful new way of understanding the micro world, the world of atoms and particles. And I just saw that today the scientists have come out and said that they have measured gravitational waves for the first time, and that actually supports Einstein's theory of relativity. So, I mean, there's been, you know, it's been a pretty good century for the physicists. Everything is rolling forward. But at this point, from the way the lecturer on the TED Talk was describing it, they've sort of reached a spot where they're facing questions that they cannot answer. And he said it's not because we don't have the brains or the technology, but because the laws of physics themselves forbid it. He said, here's essentially the problem. The universe is far, far too interesting. He said, according to relativity and quantum mechanics, they appear to suggest that the universe should be a boring place. By that, he means it should be dark, it should be lethal, it should be lifeless. But we look around us and we see that we live in a universe full of really interesting stuff. Stars, plants, trees, squirrel. And he said, ultimately, the question is, why does this stuff exist? And the classic phrasing of that is, why is there something rather than nothing? And he said, this contradiction, he said, is the most pressing problem in fundamental physics. And he said, well, you're going to find out in the next few years whether or not we'll ever be able to solve that question. He went on to talk about the heart of the problem, and he said the heart of the problem is that there are two extremely dangerous numbers. His terminology. These numbers are dangerous. Now, why does he consider these numbers dangerous? Well, we'll get to it in a bit. These numbers, he said, that we can measure, is they are dangerous in his way of thinking, because if they were different, even by a tiny bit, then the universe as we would know it would not exist. Period. They would not exist. So, he said the first of these numbers is associated with a discovery that was made at CERN recently, that of the Higgs boson. And he said, you see physicists getting really excited about that because finding the Higgs proves the existence of a cosmic energy field. He said, and that's what gives mass to all the fundamental mass to all the fundamental particles. He said, without the Higgs, there would be no Higgs field, nothing would have mass, no atoms could form, no us. Okay? Now, he said, talking about this Higgs field, he said, relativity and quantum mechanics tells us that it has two natural settings. It's either on or it's off. It's like a light switch. He said, the problem is, if it's off, there would be nothing, because there would be a zero value everywhere in space. And if it was on, it would have an enormous value. And in both of those scenarios, atoms could not exist. And if you don't have atoms, of course, you don't have stars, and you don't have trees, and you don't have planets, and blah, 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 blah. He said, in reality, the Higgs field, as it has been measured now, is just slightly on. It's not zero. But according to him, it's 10 trillion times weaker than its fully on value. He said at that light switch, it said it's like the light switch is stuck on, but just a little tiny bit. Just a little tiny bit. And if it wasn't stuck on that just a little tiny bit, no physical structures in the universe. Or if it was off, or if it was on full, no physical structures in the universe. Well, this is highly convenient. He said, so that's the first of the dangerous numbers. He said, there are people trying to come up with explanations. He said, they have sexy sounding names like supersymmetry or extra large dimensions. He said, the key point of this is this. If any of them explain this weirdly fine-tuned value of the Higgs field, then we would see new particles being created at the Large Hadron Collider along with the Higgs boson. And he said, so far, we haven't seen a sign of any of them. He said, there's an even worse example of the fine-tuning of a dangerous number. And he said, it comes from the other end of the scale. He said, when you measure across vast different distances and you study the universe on these vast different distances, he said, one of the most important consequences of Einstein's theory of relativity is that the universe began as a rapid expansion of space 13.8 billion years ago, called the Big Bang. He said, now, according to the early versions of the Big Bang theory, the universe has been expanding ever since, with gravity gradually putting on the brakes. That's the theory. But in 1998, astronomers made a stunning discovery that the expansion of the universe was actually speeding up. That it's getting bigger and bigger, faster and faster, by a mysterious repulsive force called dark energy. And he said, you know, honestly, when you hear the word dark in physics, that's like code for we have no idea what's going on here. He said, the best idea is that the energy of empty space, best idea is that it's the energy of empty space itself, that there is actually energy in the vacuum. And he said, if you run out the calculations, he said, that dark energy should be about 10 to the power of 120 times stronger than the value we observe from astronomy. He said, that's a 1 with 120 zeros behind it. He said, this is a number so mind-bogglingly huge that it's impossible to get your head around it. He said, we often use the word astronomical when we're talking about big numbers. Well, even that one won't do here. He said, this number is bigger than any number in astronomy. It's 1,000 trillion times bigger than the number of atoms in the entire universe. So that's a pretty bad prediction that we're off by that much. He said, in fact, it's been called the worst prediction in physics, and this is more than just theoretical curiosity. He said, if dark energy were anywhere near this strong, then the universe would have torn itself apart and stars and galaxies could not have formed and we would not be here. So he said, this is the second of these dangerous numbers, the strength of dark energy. And he said it, and explaining it requires an even more fantastic level of fine-tuning than we saw for the Higgs field. He said, but unlike the Higgs field, in my words, they got nothing. They have no idea why this dark energy would be so finely tuned. He said, the only way we can kind of say, well, maybe this happens, is he said there's actually a theory of multiverses, that in fact you have a near infinite number of multiverses out there. And these multiverses have the infinite number of possibilities in them as to the tuning of all these numbers. And we just happen to live in the Goldilocks one where everything is just right. So that's, it's interesting because these two numbers are, you know, kind of really driving some people to say, well, it's got to be multiverse. Because the other conclusion is even more dangerous. So he said, we have a string theory. He said, that turns out to be a pretty good theory. He said, the only problem with it at this point is that it's not just one theory. He said, it's been estimated that it might be 10 to the 500 different theories. That's a lot of theories. And he said, what's interesting about that is he said, maybe what that tells us, I'm backing into my garage, which is why my voice is softer. He said, maybe what that tells us is that all these possible universes might actually exist out there somewhere in a grand multiverse. And he said, in these various multiverses, he said, you know, there might be one where the Higgs field is different, nothing can exist. There might be another one where dark energy is different, nothing exists, but we just happen to live in the right one. The real problem here is that if the theory of multiverses is correct, I need some light, so I'm going to go wave at the garage sensor. Okay, there we go. He said the real problem is that if this is a multi-universe setting, if there is a multiverse out there and it's just Goldilocks, we may never know for sure. He said, the problem is it's unlikely we'll ever know for sure. Now, the idea of a multiverse has been around for a while, but in the last few years, we've started to get the first solid hints that this line of reasoning may get bore out. Despite high hopes for the first run of the LHC, Large Hadron Collider, what we were looking for there, we were looking for new theories on physics, supersymmetry, and extra-large dimensions. And a weirdly, he said, but despite high hopes, the LHC revealed a barren subatomic wilderness populated only by the lonely Higgs boson. He said, you know, they're actually powering up and they're trying to get to more power in the Large Hadron Collider. And he said, but if in 2 to 3 years' time when the LHC switches off again for a second long shutdown, we found nothing but the Higgs boson, we may be entering a new era in physics, an era where there are weird features of the universe that we cannot explain, an era where we have hints that we live in a multiverse that lies frustrating forever beyond our reach, an era where we will never be able to answer the question, why is there something rather than nothing? So this is really interesting to me because it, you know, all of this smacks of design. It just like, oh, I love the quote from Fox Mulder in the X-Files. I've probably said it before, and I won't use the terminology exactly that he used, but, you know, this was a terminology. If everything's a coincidence, why does it feel so darn contrived? And that's kind of where we're getting in science now. It's just so many things that work so well. And when you start combining these highly improbable occurrences that you just, you know, you're going to have an infinite number of universes. Well, if there's an infinite number, is there really an infinite, or is it finite? And if it's just finite, isn't it convenient that that finite number of universes just happened to stumble into the right combination so there could be one where there is something rather than nothing? And if, in fact, there isn't an infinite number of stars and planets, but just a really big number of stars and planets, is there a big enough number of stars and planets to make it reasonable that we would find a sufficient number that were exactly the right distance from the sun in the habitable zone, that were exactly the right combination to have water, that once you start winnowing down all these, and then on that one, the exact right coincidences and chance would come together to get life started, you know, and that they wouldn't be hit by asteroids, and they wouldn't be, you know, it's just the coincidences. And the possibilities and the chances just keep piling up, piling up, piling up to where really there's only one good reason to say that all of this just occurred by chance. And that is because you just really abhor the idea of a designer or a creator. And so, you know, if you abhor an idea of a designer and a creator, then of course you're going to embrace all of these things just happening by chance. But if you don't necessarily abhor that idea of a designer or a creator, that idea just kind of starts scratching at your brain because of all these coincidences, all these things that have just worked out. And they are in disparate areas, just worked out that everything was tuned to have something, just worked out that there were enough planets, just worked out that on those planets where there was enough water, it just so happened that you also got together all these improbable chemical reactions to actually give rise to life. You know, it just... it almost becomes inconceivable. But hope springs eternal, you know? So, because if you abhor the idea of a designer and a creator, that's all you have left. Now, if that doesn't bother you so much, you can look around. And as Paul says in Romans, you can see the beauty, you can see the majesty, you can see the power, you can see the intelligence, you can see the wisdom of the designer, of God, all around. And even more interestingly, if you just pause and you get quiet, you actually start to hear things that allow you to do better in life, you know, allow you to succeed more, allow you to get another impression that there's more going on here than we can see. None of those things ever violate our free will. I'd mentioned that this last week. We had a little hiccup this last week. And, you know, okay. It wasn't code that I wrote, but I did review most of the code. I don't know if I reviewed that one little section. If I had, I missed it. But I really should have seen it. I'm just not sure I actually reviewed that section. But does that mean that everything I do is perfect? No, I still make mistakes. I still have a will. I still can ignore certain things that I need to be paying attention to. I can still make assumptions that are a problem. But there's just been so many things over the last multiple years where I just had the right answer at the right time, or I had the answer ahead of time, and then when the problem came up, it was like, hey, there it is. So many quote-unquote coincidences that just after a while, you just go, you know, somebody's watching out for me. And the benefit of believing that, the benefit of living in that space really just so far outweighs living in the everything is by chance space that, you know, to me, as I've said before, it really doesn't matter whether I die and I'm just blanked out and black and I'm gone. The fact that I've had these experiences here have made my life richer. And it's a really fascinating, interesting life that I've had. Believing in a creator, believing in a designer, listening for his voice, trying to follow him. It's really, really interesting. And, you know, even in those times when we make mistakes and even in those times when we should have done something else, you just hold tight, you just trust, you just move forward, do the best you can do, and you know what? Everything seems to work out. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.